And a previous program was the WBAI Evening News, heard daily at 6 p.m. Stay tuned for Extinction Rebellion Radio. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online.
You're listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI.
Welcome to the Rebellion.
Welcome to Extinction Rebellion Radio with Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney on WBAI 99.5 FM New York. Extinction Rebellion is an international movement that uses nonviolent direct action to press for action on the climate emergency. Well, everybody in the world is talking about Ukraine, and so are we, because the climate crisis is fundamental to the Ukrainian situation. Now, what we mean by that is the same thing that's causing the climate crisis is contributing to the war. The industrialized world runs its economies on fossil fuels, far, far more than renewable zero emission sources. That's what's driving the climate crisis today. The industrialized world runs on fossil fuels.
Now, let's explain why that same thing, that fossil fuel dependence, is contributing to the war in Ukraine. We said this in an earlier episode that we recorded, Elise, back in January, but actually, I'm not sure if it's even broadcast yet. You know, we have a skeleton crew here at Extinction Rebellion Radio, and we have to take our recording opportunities when we can get them. So sometimes there's a while between when we record something and when it gets broadcast in our weekly slot here. But at some point, I think in January, we recorded a show where I said what's probably going to happen is Russia invades Ukraine. Then Western countries retaliate, not militarily, but with economic sanctions. Then Russia potentially cuts off gas supplies to Western countries, or threatens to do that. And then Western countries and companies cave, and ultimately Russia gets a more or less free hand in Ukraine. And so far, I'm sad to say, this is pretty much how things have developed. I hate being right all the time. Yeah. The invasion came, the sanctions came. And so that brings us to talking about that crux point of those sanctions with Russian fossil fuels. The United States only gets a small amount of its petroleum from Russia, and the U.S., a net exporter of petroleum, or at least it was before this happened. So the big thing to watch is Europe, a little bit the United Kingdom, but especially the European Union, getting its oil and its gas from Russia. Is Europe still importing petroleum from Russia post-invasion right now in March of 2022? Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. And you may have heard a big talk statement from President Joe Biden talking about a ban on Russian oil. Quote, "We're banning all imports of Russian oil and gas and energy. That means Russian oil will no longer be acceptable at U.S. ports," end quote. But again, the U.S. is not the big fish when it comes to Russian petrol. That would be the European Union and secondarily the United Kingdom. Now, the United Kingdom gets 6% of its petrol from Russia, and that's a tad less by percentage than the United States. But the United Kingdom doesn't have its own sources to make up for that. So a hard ban on Russian imports would hit the United Kingdom harder than it would the United States. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly why there is no hard ban on Russian fossil fuels in the United Kingdom. They say that they're going to phase out Russian petroleum, and they've set a target by the end of this year, the end of 2022. Plenty of time to know how the war in Ukraine is going. Plenty of time to reassess based on how things turn out. So as we speak, there is no ban on Russian petroleum in the United Kingdom. They're going right on importing it, paying Russia for it. That money is helpful to Vladimir Putin, and it's indirectly financing the Russian military. And then there's the European Union. They get 40% of their gas from Russia, 40%, according to a BBC article. The big headline of that BBC article was about a ban on Russian petroleum. And then you have to read the actual article with some attention to see that there is no such ban. What has the European Union changed about its petroleum imports from Russia since the invasion of Ukraine? Well, in a word, nothing. no changes right away, keep on importing and paying Russia, even as it's bombing maternity wards in Mariupol and shelling civilians in Kharkiv and encircling Kiev. The European Union has said it aims to end its reliance on Russian oil imports before 2030. They're giving themselves 8 years to make a change. That time frame of 2030 is, by the way, the same target they gave last year for reducing their fossil fuel emissions by 55%. And Russian gas is 40% of their gas. With some hand waving, we can say this is the same thing they already promised to do, right? Mm-hmm. In the bigger picture, they're not actually making any new targets after the invasion that they hadn't already made before it. To be exact, the European Union announcement did include that word before in front of the date 2030. So I guess if it's 2029, they've met their deadline. So with 2029 being 7 years from now, the European Union has 7 years more of Russian imports, even if they keep their word about this. Now, this is not exactly an aggressive movement that the European Union is talking about here. Mm-mm. And why not? Because they feel they can do it. They can't do it. They'd rather let the Ukrainians die than live with less energy. Mm. They don't want those strict rations that we've talked about on this program. They want their low-cost electricity and fuel at any time. It's that lifestyle they believe they must preserve. I hope they're speeding up their zero-emission sources. But here's the point, folks. It's because they didn't speed up the zero emission sources before now that we're in this situation. If they made it a full-blown international priority to solve this climate crisis, or even to begin to address it, then every country in Europe would have been massively investing in zero emission sources of energy and would only need a fraction, right? A fraction of the petroleum that they need now. And they didn't do that. And they don't want to ration electricity and fuel. So they have to pay Russia.
How much do they pay Russia? The research group Transport and Environment estimated that the European Union's gas bill, how much it pays just for gas from Russia, doesn't even include oil, as I read the report. The European Union pays Russia for gas $118 million every day.
Jeez.
You can run a modern military on that. $118 million on Tuesday, another $118 million on Wednesday, $118 million more on Thursday. On top of that, a fresh $118 million on Friday. You get the idea. If anybody wants to do the math, that's $826 million per week, week in and week out. The yearly figure comes to $43 billion sent to Russia annually for gas. And of course, we're talking about the European Union. The same lifestyle points apply to the United States and to the United Kingdom. It's just that European Union happens to be the first proximate destination for Russian gas. And that gas gets burnt. Talk about doubly destroying the world. It's driving the climate crisis, burning this gas, and it's driving Russian military aggression, or enabling Russian military aggression.
Mm-hmm.
The fundamentals of the Ukrainian invasion are an expansionist state that exports fossil fuels. This is the structure of what's happening. An expansionist state that exports fossil fuels. The combination of those two things. An expansionist state, number one. That, number two, exports something other states depend on. And that thing is fossil fuels. That is what's happening. I know I'm repeating myself, but it took me a while to think this, you know, to put this together. This is like my analysis of putting it together here. I thought about it a lot. In our world, this is what it looks like when an exporter of fossil fuels wants to expand. As long as that situation continues, as long as those two conditions are present, there's a chance of more war. As long as we have an expansionist country that exports something crucial that other countries need, then that expansionist country has the ability to keep on invading places. Russia can carry on. We could have prevented this situation from developing, as Ailey said a minute ago, by converting away from fossil fuels. We could have done that years ago. And from this point, the longer we wait to do that, the longer this situation continues, the more vulnerable that other countries are, besides just Ukraine. Whoever wins this current war, Russia or Ukraine, it is, of course, too late to prevent this war from happening. But it is not too late to prevent similar wars in other countries. The way to prevent similar wars in other countries is to transition rapidly away from fossil fuels.
Now, spend a few minutes with a map, and you can spin all kinds of scenarios about what Russia could try to do in the future. Looking at the non-NATO countries that border Russia, that would be Georgia, Moldova, Azerbaijan, and Finland. Finland borders Sweden. That's another non-NATO country. And Sweden is increasing its military spending just in the past 2 weeks in anticipation of that very scenario. If Russia allies with Hungary, where President Orban is said to be good friends with Vladimir Putin, and Hungary is a NATO country, but if somehow they come to an arrangement, that would open a pathway down to Serbia, Bosnia, Macedonia. Those aren't NATO countries. And of course, some of the countries formerly under Russian domination are NATO countries. And the huge question is whether NATO would do a full mobilization to defend them. Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia, Poland would be an awfully big one and would take Russia right to the borders of Germany. All of these places are far smaller than Ukraine. None have large militaries except for Sweden and maybe Poland. I'm not, you know, saying that any of these invasion scenarios is likely. I'm saying that the conditions for some of that to happen are present as long as we depend on fossil fuels. And as long as we depend on fossil fuels and Russia wants to expand, we're going to have to worry about some of these things happening.
Unfortunately, you should probably banish any thought from your mind that this is all about to be over. I have to say, I was skeptical of claims that this would be a short war, or even that Russia thought it would be a short war. Ukraine is, after all, the largest country in Europe, besides Russia. So even with a total commitment of the Russian military, it was going to take some time. 2 weeks would have been extremely fast to take even just Kiev, and they seem to be interested in the entire country. So all those carbon-emitting planes and all those carbon-emitting tanks and trucks and tragically all that death will keep on for a while longer.
Now, how can we improve this situation? Well, unless we're senior members of the Russian ruling class, then we can't easily control Russia's desire to expand. But we can control our dependence on fossil fuels.
Yes, we can.
Now, you might be thinking, didn't I hear something about a pipeline getting stopped? Well, yeah, you did. The Nord Stream 2 pipeline from Russia to Germany was not yet completed anyway. So if Germany canceled that pipeline, it wouldn't change a thing about current fossil fuel use. Russia would have the same exports, get the same revenue, creating the same emissions, heating up the planet at the same time. The pipeline wasn't operational. If it were canceled and not replaced by something else, then the effect is on future emissions and trends, not on current emissions and trends, right?
Mm-hmm.
But Germany hasn't canceled the pipeline. Nope. The Nord Stream 2 pipeline is not canceled. It is suspended. That's the word. Suspended means put on pause. It's like hitting the pause button when you're watching a DVD. Now, you can hit the play button at any time, and the movie keeps right on going. So it's like that with the pipeline. They can still make it operational at any time, and they're not even denying an intention to eventually make it operational. This is Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney, and you are listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM New York as we talk about Ukraine. We are talking about how deeply our fossil fuel use is intertwined with what is happening there. Right now is an unfavorable time for Germany to start operating a Russian pipeline. But it's there waiting for a time when they would find it more acceptable to use. Maybe a couple of years down the road, things look different. Remember Crimea, Russia invaded Crimea in 2014, and the international community said, how dare they? There were sanctions, and then things pretty much died down, right? A year later, relations between Russia and the West were almost back to normal. Now the Ukrainian mainland is far larger, and this has already been massively more violent and destructive than the annexation of Crimea. So it's not an apples-to-apples comparison by any point of the, by any stretch of the imagination. My point in bringing up Crimea is just that memories can be short.
Yep.
This language of suspending or pausing things is what most major corporations are using. Not cancellation, not full withdrawal. McDonald's has suspended operations in Russia. Yeah. I had to laugh when I heard about that. McDonald's even added the word temporary as though to reassure Russians that they will eventually be able to pollute their bodies with Big Macs once more. Now, the pathway to diabetes paved with supersized Coca-Cola's will once again be open to you, you Russians. I'm not sure the suspension of McDonald's restaurants is going to hurt the Russian war effort. It might help the health of their troops. You know, but I digress. Anyway, same goes for KFC. I wish they would suspend KFC in my community. Same goes for KFC, suspended operations in Russia. Pizza Hut, suspended operations in Russia. British American Tobacco, suspended operations in Russia. So far, still not hearing any disadvantage to Russian here. Now, although British American Tobacco was a weird one, the BBC article I saw said they were suspending operations in Russia, but their work in Russia would continue. That's the wording that they're using, right? I'm not sure how that makes any sense. Now, how can you suspend operations but continue your work? But that's what they said. And you're seeing this. Some companies will announce the suspension of some operations, but continue their operations. You hear 1984 in this, people. You know, hence, you know, Procter & Gamble says it's not adding any new investment in Russia, but it's continuing to export to Russia. Same with Nestle, Unilever. It doesn't sound like a significant change from these companies as far as I can see. Now, a lot of commercial brands have calculated that they'd rather not alienate their base customers in the United States. So Starbucks, Estee Lauder, L'Oreal, Burberry, Chanel, Zara, H&M, IKEA, Levi's, Tommy Hilfiger, on and on and on and on. All these big stores that rely on commercial traffic in the West are making it clear that they're suspending their work, but also making it clear that they consider this temporary. Now, they're not withdrawing their business in Russia. They're just closing their stores for now. It's kind of like a, you know, COVID shutdown. Apple closed its stores and it hasn't cut off online sales, but it's limited them, it says. Samsung has not closed its stores, last I read, but it has stopped making new shipments into Russia. So a little from column A and a little from column B, I suppose. Movie releases have been suspended. The Batman can't play in Russian movie theaters for now. But again, just a suspended release, not a canceled release. Sort of like putting pause on it. Same with Sony Pictures and Disney. Netflix has paused its services in Russia, but again, paused. The implication is that Russians can get their Hollywood movies in due course. It must feel like the early pandemic in Russia with so many stores of restaurants and theaters closing down.
Meanwhile, I'm not so thrilled about the internet cutoffs that we're seeing.
I'm not either.
An internet segregated by national borders is extremely worrisome for long-term international relations. That is not, it strikes me, the way to prevent future wars with Russia. For example, TikTok is maybe the leading platform among people younger than 20. And now TikTok has segregated its Russian users from its non-Russian users. Now, young people in Russia don't get to communicate with and literally don't get to see young people outside of Russia and vice versa. If that stays in place for a long time, it doesn't bode well. Facebook, for its part, normally doesn't allow calls to violence and will take them down if it notices them. Well, they're changing that now. Facebook is going to allow people to call for violence against Russian soldiers and against Vladimir Putin personally on their platforms. Also, President Lukashenko of Belarus, you could now call for violence against him on Facebook. About a week ago, as we're recording this, Russia has blocked Facebook from its platforms. Facebook owns Instagram. It owns WhatsApp. These are the fundamental forms of 21st century communication, especially across international borders, and they're getting shut off in Russia. Doesn't bode well to me. But back to fossil fuels, the big Western oil and gas companies, the information is sketchy on what exactly they're doing. They've made some high profile announcements about cutting their investments in Russia. But what does that mean exactly? ExxonMobil, Equinor, and Shell Oil all said something like that. Total Energies will keep its investments in Russia, but it won't make new ones, it says. But none of these companies are spelling out exactly what this means. Even the BBC says straight up that they can't tell what this means. To quote from their article, quote, "It is still far from clear what will happen to those investments," unquote. And the New York Times said basically the same thing, referring to BP divesting from the Russian oil company Rosneft. Quote, "It was not clear how BP would accomplish its exit from Rosneft," unquote. So nobody quite knows exactly what these companies are doing with Russia. These investments are worth, after all, billions of dollars. It's likely that the oil companies are trying to get a good headline, play for a little bit of time, and keep their options open. Now, all this, we're going on and on about what companies are and aren't doing in Russia. All this is to give some context to what it means when Germany says it's suspending the Nord Stream 2 pipeline. Nobody is canceling fossil fuel infrastructure. The pipeline is still there. Those fossil fuels are still there, ready to get pumped through perhaps a couple of years from now. So we've been talking about Nord Stream 2. There is also the Nord Stream 1 pipeline, and that is still operational. Reuters sent a reporter to check on it just to make sure. And yep, it is still pumping gas like normal. This is in March 2022. After the invasion of Ukraine is in full swing and that gas is still flowing from Russia to Europe. The pipeline operator said, quoted in Reuters, quote, "Nord Stream AG," that's the company, "is not targeted by the sanctions against Nord Stream 2, neither by any other sanctions. Consequently, Nord Stream AG is able to execute its payments," unquote. The Americans, the British, the Europeans, everybody is avoiding sanctions that actually change the imports of Russian gas. It's business as usual for Russian gas.
Yes, it is. So the West isn't turning off the taps. But what if Russia turns on its side of the taps and demands some things in exchange for turning them back on? Now, the West, especially Western Europe, still wants to diversify its sources of oil and gas. And that is why the Iranian nuclear deal is speeding up. It hasn't made it to the headlines like it normally would if it weren't for the Ukrainian invasion. But the negotiators from Iran and from the West have said in recent days that they think a deal is close. And crucially, that the deal would include Iran being able to export some oil to Western countries. Now, Iran is currently banned from exporting oil to Western countries. They're talking about lifting the ban. These negotiations have been going on for over a year now. They restarted almost immediately after Biden took office. Now, do you really think that it's a coincidence that they made a breakthrough just days after Russia invaded Ukraine? Now, these two things are related, right? The timing of the invasion of Ukraine and the breakthrough in the Iranian negotiations is perfectly aligned. The European Union, the United Kingdom, and the United States are concerned that they might have an oil shortage, and they want that Iranian oil, so they're making concessions to Iran that they weren't making before.
This is Elise Lane and Matthew Kearney, and you are listening to Extinction Rebellion Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM New York, as we talk about the climate crisis in Ukraine, talking about how our fossil fuel dependence here in the U.S., but especially in Europe, is driving this situation and enabling this invasion.
You know, still, I hope, dear listener, you're getting what we're saying here. That scenario of either the Russia or the Western side turning off the taps, that hasn't happened yet. The Russian gas is running. It hasn't even been interrupted. Nobody is disrupting the Russian fossil fuel exports. Russia gets to blow up Ukraine and Europe pays Russia to burn their fossil fuel and cooks the planet for the rest of us. And nobody is disrupting this situation.
Extinction Rebellion Radio.
Cannot rest until it come. We who believe in freedom,
You're tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial WBAI New York with a moment in women's history.
A choice as to whether or not we will rid the country of racism is a choice that white America has to make.
Ella Baker, co-founder of the Christian Leadership Conference to Fight Racism and the inspiring force behind SNCC, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, after the Greensboro, North Carolina lunch counter sit-ins. Along with CORE, the Congress of Racial Equality, SNCC organized the 1961 Freedom Rides and in 64 Freedom Summer to register black voters in Mississippi. Baker says marches are necessary to dramatize injustice, but asks why march to Washington?
Why not march to Long Island? Why not march to Westchester? Why not march to the slums of New Jersey? Why not march to Harlem, to Bedford-Stuyvesant? Not in terms of a physical march, but in terms of recognizing that what is happening in these places in terms of poverty is a responsibility that has to be dealt with by those who are not impoverished. In other words, those of us who have money have got to speak to those who are in power.
Ella Baker says voting is the key. The Ella Baker Center for Human Rights Today advocates for books, not bars, jobs, not jails, health care, not handcuffs. You can hear more Ella Baker and other trailblazers from WBAI's Women's History Collection by becoming a WBAI buddy, a sustaining member of WBAI. $15 a month makes you a sustaining member, a WBAI buddy. You'll receive our extensive Women's History Collection plus WBAI's tote bag, and we'll throw in a special gift. Please call 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950 to become a WBAI buddy in the name of your favorite WBAI program or in the name of all WBAI shows. 212-209-2950. We're looking for more people to become WBAI buddies. 212-209-2950. Or please go to this website, women.wbai.org, women.wbai.org, to become a WBAI buddy on this Women's History Day.
I'm a woman who speaks in a voice.
In a voice.
And I must be heard. At times I can be quite difficult. I'll bow to no man's word. How are we who believe in freedom and not
And the previous program was Extinction Rebellion Radio, heard Tuesdays right after the WBAI Evening News. Stay tuned for We Only Want the World with Sansara Taylor. That's coming up in the next hour. And this is still WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org online.